You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Studio ready to go. We have Gen Z and Gen Alpha's favorite politician, Chloe Swarbrick.
I'm at the very tail end of the millennials.
Oh, the Gen Zers, they love you. They love you.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you.
No, of course, of course.
It's Are you speaking on behalf of the Gen Zers?
I am.
As an elected representative of the Generation Z. Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah, it was funny when I Googled you because I was like, oh, are you a Gen Z or are you millennial?
Yeah, I was born in 1994.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good middle ground, though.
Yeah, I think Tam was born in 1997, which makes her the first of the Gen Z. It really depends.
Timothy Paul.
Yes. Timothy Paul, MP for Wellington Central.
Yes, I saw that with one of her recent posts where she's like really big. Have you seen that post?
Yeah.
And they're playing that really awesome song. Let's do a little quick quiz. I'm a bit of a quizler over here on the one.
I'm actually shocking at quizzes.
Okay, so, well, I'm sure we'll get this one.
Embarrassing myself on our one.
Can you guess the missing principle from the New Zealand Greens Charter? We've got ecological wisdom, non-violence,
social responsibility, and appropriate decision making.
Oh, actually, it's the principle of communism and destroying the New Zealand rental property market.
Is that Karl Marx or Mortimer Ingalls?
Mortimer Ingalls!
Well, that was what Winston Peters said when we chucked out our budget. I found it really insightful, that when we put out our budget, the green budget, a week before the government chucked theirs out, we saw the government talk a heck of a lot more about what the Greens would do to create a more prosperous, more unified Aotearoa New Zealand than what they themselves had done, which I think tells you a heck of a lot.
It does, it does. And they're doing a really great job.
Yeah, that's why 191 people are leaving the country
every day.
Every single day.
Oh my goodness. Or to Melbourne as well, it seems like. Melbourne or London. Mm. If you're really freaky, you go to Berlin.
I mean, back in the day, the whole reason that I got involved in politics with a big P was because we were seeing a very similar exodus of people under the former national government.
Right, 2012?
And I was like, 2015, 2016, So when I ran for the Auckland mayoralty back in the day, as a 22-year-old with a whole lot of opinions about things. But, you know, I was crystal clear back at that point in time that, of course, I didn't know everything. You know, no one does. Any politician who stands in front of you and says that is either lying to you or completely lacking self-awareness.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went and engaged with all the experts and researchers and community leaders and produced the policies, but nonetheless, the core point was stay here and fight, you cowards. You know, I get it in terms of the issues that people are facing with cost of living. Obviously, it's a pretty diabolical time out there at the moment, but nothing changes if nothing changes. And I think one of the unfortunate and very intentional byproducts of this government shredding the social safety net and care and opportunities for people is that regular people are disengaging from politics, which only concentrates power and wealth in the hands that already have it.
Yep, and this trend is getting amped to the nth degree recently with the announced electoral reform to pause same-day enrolments, with David Seymour calling those who do that dropkicks.
Yeah.
Pretty infuriating stuff.
Absolutely terrifying stuff, actually. Mm. And we should, as New Zealanders, stand unified against any move to effectively disenfranchise other New Zealanders from engaging in the democratic process. Mm-hmm. This is a pathway to voter suppression.
Yeah, it is.
They can provide no meaningful argument as to why they would seek to remove the opportunity for same-day enrolment and voting. They have kind of gestured in a kind of abstract way towards the fact that it might potentially take slightly longer to count those votes. But again, the point of democracy is that everybody should be able to be engaged in it. Mm-hmm. So when they are trying to make that harder for people, I'd also actually point out that back when we were making changes to the Electoral Act to allow there to be voting booths at, I think, malls and a few other places where, you know, people actually tend to frequent, that they opposed that back in the day when they were in opposition and we were in that governing relationship with Labour. And the arguments that they were making back then were really similar, which, you know, if you lift the veil, are basically, why make it easier for people to engage in democracy? Our voters don't need that.
It's pretty shocking stuff, really.
It tells you everything you need to know.
It does, and it's going in the same way as the US. You mentioned Cozy Lives before. I want to touch on that real quick because, you know, a lot of students face a lot of issues due to the cost of living crisis, whether that's rental prices or just food prices. There's also a lack of third spaces. They're all dying out. People don't really have any way to have fun in town without breaking the bank. And they also have no way to really lobby nationally, as the New Zealand United Students Association is in a bit of a shambly state. How are students supposed to be heard in the long term if the status quo remains?
Well, guys, we need to organise. I think 2017, or rather last year, we're far on from 2017, 2024, when the government obviously put out the Treaty Principles Bill and we saw the unity around Toitū Tiriti, we saw hundreds of thousands of New Zealanders all across this country mobilise. If this government can be credited with anything, it is in fact, I think, unifying the country against its agenda, which is anti-people, anti-planet, anti-Tiriti.
Yeah.
And that mobilisation done or that kind of activism, I think, allowed people to see our power. When you're standing in a rally with hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of other New Zealanders, you know that you are not alone and you know that you have shared values with the people who are there. And that, I think, is one of the most potent and powerful things that we could possibly realise, is that we are part of something bigger.
Yes.
And in those kinds of crowds, I think, again, frequently there's so many things that politicians who may seek to divide people could point to in order to divide them, but we all are all unified on a far bigger purpose, mm-hmm. and far bigger values. So that's the stuff that we have to hold on to. But we need to move from simply turning up to organising. And organising looks like, I think, you know, at a really local level in the microcosms of our communities, how do we create mutual aid networks? How do we share knowledge? How do we ensure that no one gets left behind? Mm. And I think about this in the context of Auckland Central, my electorate, where time and again, you know, I have emails from people who are complaining about those who are sleeping homeless, and I just kind of have this thought consistently. What if everyone who sent one of those complaints instead directed that energy to advocating for and supporting the people who are experiencing that hardship?
Mm.
That energy, I think, would be far more constructive and productive to getting the outcomes that we all actually want in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, totally. On a way lower stakes kind of comparison.
Now, it's all connected.
Recently, I've noticed on my algorithm, I get tons of really bad music. And they'll have no likes, but there's a million comments saying, "You're shit, you're shit, you're shit."
Is it?
Better to maybe channel the energy into highlighting good artists rather than dogpiling very bad ones.
Yeah, I think it's that classic thing where, I don't know if it's human nature or just late-stage capitalism and the incentives therein, whereby we are primed to spend a lot of energy complaining about things as opposed to kind of building the world that we want.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is actually something that I reflect on time and again, because since I've been co-leader in particular and this toxic, awful, nasty government came to power, I've been asking these rooms full of hundreds of people, you know, who here is excited about the future? And frequently fewer than half a dozen people in a sea of hundreds will put their hand up. And I just kind of have to go, guys, this is our problem. If we are all feeling so uninspired and so unwilling to kind of look beyond the immediate around what it is that we're trying to build and that we can work together to create, then we're kind of boxing ourselves into a corner of fatigue and exhaustion. And how on earth are we ever to find the energy that is sustainable to create something new?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really what our project is going to look like in the coming days and weeks and months. And that's why I'd invite everybody at 5:30 p.m. mm-hmm. to come to Eric's, where we'll be talking about our green budget, an alternative, a different way of doing this economics thing is entirely plausible and entirely within our reach. And I'd say the majority of New Zealanders actually want to see it happen because they care about each other and the planet that we live on.
Mm.
But yeah, we don't have to put up with this.
No.
You know, the system only continues to sustain itself on people's exhaustion and resignation.
It does. I want to quickly switch gears here. I want to move on to talking about the local government elections, which are coming up very soon in September. Go enroll if you haven't already. Party politics seem to be becoming a fast fixture of local government elections as more parties run candidates in many constituencies, Greens included. Do you think this is counterintuitive, given how most voters in local elections tend to vote not on party lines, but more on who they know and a more local issue kind of sense?
I think that people should always vote for the things that they want to see happen, regardless of whatever the party alignment looks like. Mm. And, you know, as you just kind of allude to, a big part of that is the sense of trust that people have in local candidates, whether they know them, whether they trust them.
Mm.
But I think that the greater presence or visibility of party politics at a local government level is actually just starting to be more honest. A lot of those candidates and those mayors and otherwise have been associated to political parties for kind of time immemorial, but it's only just now that we're starting to see the veil lifted and people be straight up and honest about it.
Mm.
So when it comes to the way that we and the Greens facilitate these things, I can say pretty hand on heart that we are one of the most democratic parties in the country in terms of how it's not at all centrally controlled, how our candidates end up getting an endorsement to run on the kind of green ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So those candidates have had the endorsement and gone through a process with our local branch here in Otipoti, Dunedin, and they're a phenomenal group of people who care about the same values that you were asking me about in our quick quiz earlier of, you know, caring for each other and the planet that we live on. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is nuts. It is nuts.
Yeah, but obviously a very different mandate to the mahi that we do at a central government level. But yeah, I mean, just the openness and the honesty of being on that same platform means that people know and understand that we share those same core values.
I want to again switch pivots. You mentioned central government before. Mm-hmm. In the past two Labour governments, the Greens have had various arrangements with the ruling Labour Party. They've had ministerial portfolios outside of cabinet, but they haven't been part of cabinet. NZ First and ACT seem to steamroll the National Party into getting some pretty cosy coalition agreements. What is that election result and that coalition arrangement taught you and the Greens about maybe your bargaining power coming into 2026?
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Give me some core balls.
Yeah, I think one of the major insights for me, which I hope is something that mainstream media kind of reflects on, is we so frequently are told that the only way that apparently the Greens can extract concessions politically or policy-wise is if we're willing to say that we're going to work with the National Party or, as opposed to Labour. And I just kind of have to consistently be like, nobody says that to the ACT Party. But yeah, I think that this is where it really, really boils down to just being completely straight up about our transformative agenda throughout the election campaign. Actually, I think it's important to also acknowledge that this government has a negatively transformative agenda, which they were not honest with the public about throughout the election campaign. The amount of buyer's remorse that I've heard from, you know, those who voted for this government or for the parties of this government, who are now just kind of like, I wanted action on the cost of living, man. It wasn't to completely disassemble the country and sell it off the parts. But yeah, when it comes to the Greens now negotiating power, this is where I want people to understand that no politician and no political party owns any electorate or owns any voters or owns the so-called middle, whatever the hell that's supposed to actually mean. New Zealanders get to decide the agenda that we want to see rolled out that governs our country. And government isn't this like sector that's just floating over there. It's supposed to be a manifestation of the will of the people of this country. And regardless of whoever is in power, you need to hold them accountable. So we're really proud of the fact that we are putting on the table a genuinely transformative agenda which will address the cost of living, reduce people's cost of living, rapidly reduce climate changing emissions, but also increase our quality of life. We can have a grown up country that makes the requisite investment in our infrastructure, in our healthcare system, in our education system, but we're going to have to pay for it. And we are the only party who is being straight up about the fact that we want to shift the tax burden from those who work to those who merely accumulate wealth. 91% of New Zealanders would pay less income tax under our plan. That's not a headline that you'll hear from the media. Nor from obviously the National Party as they're attacking us, but only the top 3% would pay a wealth tax. And for any political party that wants to talk about hardworking New Zealanders, I find it utterly diabolical that currently that we accept that the wealthiest 311 households in this country pay an effective tax rate less than half of that of the average New Zealander. What that means is the multi-millionaires are paying half the effective tax rate of you, my friend, of all of your listeners, of the firefighters and the nurses and the teachers.
They worked 300 times harder than I do. So, you know, I think you're entitled to the fruits of their labour.
Yeah, that's how wealth accumulation works, right?
Yeah. I want to touch on the Greens campaign launch very shortly. Do you have like an extra 5 minutes to spare?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Okay. So this next question, a little bit long-winded, but I think it'll be a good one.
I love student radio.
So South Dunedin is a low-lying reclaimed area facing rising sea levels and fast coastal erosion. It's very much exposed to climate change. Community engagement from the Otago Regional Council indicates that while South Dunediners aren't interested in full-scale managed retreat quite yet, they're very interested in living with more wetlands and water ways to mitigate the effects of climate change. Despite the rhetoric we hear about the government stealing land in managed retreat scenarios, or, you know, communities being like, we don't need change, do you think New Zealanders are actually more ready to deal with the reality of climate change than some might give them credit for?
100%. New Zealanders are pragmatic and, you know, far out, man. Like, you know, in the middle of Auckland anniversary floods, when people may recall that in our largest city, our airport went underwater, you know, at that point in time, I had spent years and years and years, 5 or 6 or so years, trying to talk to people about what the reality of the climate crisis would look like. And then all of a sudden, our largest city is underwater, and I'm helping people rip out carpets and curtains after their lives and livelihoods have been turned upside down. And then seemingly, almost overnight, or at least within the space of a few weeks, we've kind of moved on from those crises. And I think the same thing seems to happen when it comes to, you know, what's happened up in Northland, on the west coast of the South Island, at the top of the South, obviously in South Dunedin. Otherwise, the psyche seems to get us back into the space of outside of that crisis, where we have seen human beings operate in an incredibly amazing collective way to put our values at the forefront of supporting each other without any arbitrary means testing or notion of who is deserving or otherwise.
Yeah.
In crisis, we show who we are, but then we kind of get back into the cut and thrust of competing with each other,
yeah,
punching down or otherwise, because again, that's what this economic system currently incentivizes us to do. But in a nutshell, yes, I think that New Zealanders are far more pragmatic than they are currently being given credit for by most of our politicians. And that's why I'm actually quite concerned about the fact that the phenomenal work that has been done by the community to produce the Southern End Futures Project, which has been consulted on for years and years and years after the flooding down there, has been kind of rejected in terms of the funding that's necessary to just get on with the pragmatic next steps for whether it be managed retreat or wetland restoration or green infrastructure building by the government. Meanwhile, they're talking a big game about climate adaptation.
Yeah, it's pretty bum.
That's one way to put it. Yeah.
So you're doing a pretty major campaign launch over at Eric's tonight. It's pretty exciting for a lot of folks out there. What do you see, excluding what we just talked about, the South D climate change stuff, excluding that, what do you see as some major challenges for Otipoti in the near future, and why should people vote for the Greens to help solve that? Will you build us a brand new hospital?
We are committed. Okay. We are committed to that. And more than that, we're committed to providing for the requisite training spaces so that we're actually connecting the dots on those who are coming through and training in the healthcare sector here to work and to have jobs domestically in this country. Mm. I mean, you've probably heard of the hiring freeze that is currently in place in the health system, which means that many of our graduate nurses and midwives or otherwise are going offshore, and we're going to have a really bloody hard time getting them back after also having invested and paying partially for their tertiary study.
All the mahi, none of the treats.
Exactly. Oh, it's cooked, man. It's actually just at the end of the day, what it really boils down to is just, it's so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a waste of all of our time and energy and resource.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to be really clear about what's happening tonight. So firstly, at 5:30, we will be providing a presentation on and the opportunity for people to ask questions about the Green Budget, which is where we've put forward a proposal alongside a whole of economy transformation for something that looks after people and planet. Basically, free GP services, free dental care, free early childhood education, tax reform, and a range of other things which would allow us to live up to our potential as a country. And we'll lay all of that out and people can ask any questions about how we'd actually practically see that happen. It's our fully costed plan that we released a week before the government's budget. And then after that, at I believe 7 or so, we will be getting into the local government candidates launch. So there we've got some phenomenal candidates, and I'll just run through them. We've got Rose Finney, Lily Waring, Alan Somerville, and Mickey Treadwell. Mickey obviously is our mayoral candidate. So those are candidates both for DCC and for ORC. And I guess what's at stake this local government election? So it always blows my mind how few people engage with local government elections.
Yep.
Because if you think about the things that you do when you wake up in the morning and interact with the world, you know, turning on your tap and water comes out.
Yes.
You know, walking onto the footpath, seeing whether a bus turns up at your bus stop on time, and then, you know, going to a cafe and, you know, knowing that that food is safe because, you know, there has been the requisite kind of authority stamping that and regulating that. All of those things are touch points for local government and the regulation that keeps all of us safe, but also can make those things more or less affordable, more or less accessible. So local government really is the most immediate example of politics in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah,
and if you want to see, as you're alluding to earlier, more of those third spaces that, God forbid, make our cities amazing and places worth living in, then that's local government's job. And what I'd really like to see from local government elections all across the country this year is actually people who are willing to stand up to central government, because we have seen this government come in harping on about localism, but then getting into a position of power and punching down on and patronising local government and trying to constrain decisions made in the interests of local people.
Yeah.
And all of that is just absolutely nuts. Because local government currently does not have the resources necessary to meet its mandate. So we need to see some radical transformation there as well in terms of the likes of revenue sharing between central and local government.
Mm, yeah, I mean, local government could just do, you know, what this government is doing, just sell all their assets. Maybe then they could fund some decent water infrastructure.
Oh, well, actually, on that point, I think it's really important that people understand that we're holding a ticking time bomb with local government. So local governments all across the country experienced a downgrading in their credit rating as a result of the government shredding the Three Waters program, and the international markets going, that doesn't look like certainty as far as your water infrastructure being fixed and resilient looks like. Mm-hmm. So then we also have seen these record rates increases, because historically local government has not been incentivized to actually, you know, meet their mandate and make the requisite investment to build the infrastructure that people deserve. So that was always going to happen at some point. Meanwhile, they are having to sell off their assets in order to, as some are arguing, to keep rates officially low. That is not a recipe for a sustainable local government sector in this country, nor for sustainable communities. So something's got to give. And I think candidates that are being honest about the challenges in front of us and unifying people about how we work together to address them are important now more than ever. So yeah, I'd encourage people to come on down to Eric's and to hear all about our amazing people who are running locally and how they'll address these issues for you.
And that's at 5:30?
5:30 is our budget yarn, so that's where you'll hear a lot from me. And there'll be the opportunity for Q&A and all of that. And then yeah, from 7 we'll be having the local government launch.
Mean, awesome. Well folks, if you want to go see what the Greens have in store for Autoporty, head on down to Eric's at 5:30. That's on Crawford Street. Double feature indeed. Yeah, Alan Ned Gray is also doing some music, I hear.
Yeah, there's all kinds of amazing things that are going to happen. Surprises.
Yeah, very, very exciting stuff. All right, well, thank you for coming on the program. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. You know, I haven't had a politician on here.
I love the Student Radio Network. Yeah, it's got this is my DNA.
You got to keep it silly. You got to keep it real silly. Coming up at 10, we have a chat with Amanda Verko from the Otago Regional Council on the importance of enrolling for the 2025 local government elections. Very much continuing this kaupapa or this chat. That term is so overused. And like neoliberalized, kind of like, you know, gosh. Anyway, I shouldn't be saying that.
We live in capitalism. Power seems inescapable. Too did the divine right of kings.
Yeah, I need to stop.
Some Ursula Le Guin for your morning.
Yeah. It's 9:23. You've requested Geneva AM's Toi Tu Te Tiriti. Any final words, Chloe?
Final words, don't let the system get you down. I mean, frequently whenever we are, you know, critiquing the system, we are told by people not to hate the player, hate the game. We hate the game. This Hunger Games sucks.
It does suck.
If the rules of this game see fewer and fewer people winning and more people losing year on year, then maybe we should change the rule of that game.
Yeah.
And rules, rather. We don't live in a game of Monopoly. We can change the rules when they don't work for the majority of people. I would remind New Zealanders that we have done really big things in the past, in the 30s and 40s off the back of world wars and some of the greatest atrocities and the Great Depression. We decided to come together as a country and create the welfare state to pay for public education, public healthcare, and public housing. And we did so by higher taxes on those who had profited handsomely during a time of hardship for many. Yeah. We can do these things again. Yeah. We're not 5 million random people all running around this country competing with each other. Mm-hmm. We are New Zealanders and we get to choose to build the society that we deserve.
Yep.
And this isn't just about future generations. It's about right now, and it's about people understanding that if we are to tolerate the gross inequality that we currently have, where the top 1% hold 23% of all of the wealth, then we are inherently accepting that that necessitates that there is a larger and larger group of New Zealanders who are going without. And frankly, that is not only unfair, but it's depriving us of the investment that all of us need that make this country go around.
Yep, and the economy isn't some angry god either.
Exactly, that we have to sacrifice our lambs to. Angry.
Yeah. All right, folks, here's Geneva AM with Toi Tu Te Tiriti. You're listening to The One. Let's go.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.